flying blind today because Laurel's out sick. Dennis gracefully is helping us out with the recording today, but forgive us if we mess some things up. Laurel's not here to keep us in line. So, I think we're up to a quorum, so we'll go ahead. Starting with my report. So, a few items to report. The first is this academic story conversation. I tried to enlist us all in for the semester and the year. We've had 8 lunches, 3 breakfasts, and countless committee meetings during the semester, and in which we've engaged in this conversation in many varied groups. And there seems to be a pretty clear consensus emerging that collaboration and leadership are sort of do or should form the nucleus of our Sonoma State's academic identity for the story that we tell the world and that we use to structure our own organization. And so collaboration is the theme of the retreat on January 12th. That's 9 to 1 in the Library Teaching Center, the second floor south. Hope you'll all be there. And if you are part of an exciting collaboration that's going on, I encourage you to let Laurel know that you'll put together a poster or some small display there to share that work with other people. There's amazing things happening all over campus that I keep finding out about, and trying to use the part of the retreat to share more of those. So if you're part of something, read my email invitation and see if you've got something you could showcase at the retreat. Next item is budget priorities. The provost has requested of the Senate that a faculty group be convened to put together some guiding principles for budget decisions in academic affairs. And so that group is going to be the Senate Budget Subcommittee, supplemented by 2 department chairs. And so a call went out to all department chairs from Structure and Functions. Structure and Functions selected Karen Jaffe from Anthropology and Christine Renaud from Modern Languages and Literature to augment the Budget Subcommittee for this task. Their timeline is the spring semester, basically. And the provost has assured us that deans and other people within the Academic Affairs Administration are open to frank conversation about how budgeting happens in academic affairs, and that'll help us to make some recommendations, guiding principles. So the last item I want to talk about is a little lengthier. It's the task force called for by the Academic Senate resolution requesting letters sent to an impartial third party requesting an evaluation of recent student referendum. That was a resolution we passed last May. The task force has worked throughout the fall semester to identify and contact potential third parties. We've sent, I should tell you, the task force consists of me, Senator Luttman, Senator Cabanas, Senator Byrne, and Secretary Leese. And the 5 of us have sent letters to 3 agencies asking whether they would undertake the evaluation request resolution, and has also communicated with retired ombudspersons. So the status of our inquiries, all of these letters were sent on October 18th. We sent a letter to WASC, which declined to participate, determined that this situation was not in their purview. The Sonoma County Grand Jury, which has not responded to the letter or to follow-up phone calls, and to the Office of the State Auditor, which currently has the letter with one of their investigators to determine whether this is something they wish to look at, and their office is unable to give me any estimate of the timeline for that answer. This Office of the State Auditor also has the authority to refer the matter to the CSU auditor if they decide to do that. The task force also contacted the State Attorney General's office, which indicated this issue is not in their purview, and the CSU auditor's office requires a request by a campus president to directly pursue an audit. So that wasn't an avenue open to us. In addition, a retired ombudsperson has indicated a willingness to perform an evaluation pro bono if expenses have been covered. And finally, the task force has agreed to send the letter called for in the resolution to the Office of the State Auditor tomorrow or next week. So, as the chair of the faculty, I believe that when the letter to the state auditor is sent tomorrow or next week, that the task force will have carried out the charge given to it It's attempted to engage three different third-party agencies and has not yet had a positive response. If a potential impartial third party does respond in the affirmative prior to hearing from the state auditor or subsequent to a negative answer from the state auditor, I would reconvene the task force to draft the full letter and provide whatever information that third party needs to perform the evaluation. Engaging an ombudsperson is, I believe, beyond the scope of the original resolution. We require the identification of funding sources, and it might trigger, even for a pro bono engagement, university public agency contracting requirements. And pursuing this avenue would require further Senate direction. So I'm ruling that the task force both completed its work when the letter to the state auditor is mailed, which should happen, like I said, tomorrow or next week. So I'm open to conversation, questions, comments on anything. Senator Byrne.
Thank you. Chair Court. I want to comment that this committee, I believe, membership of this committee has worked quite well together. It has been highly collegial, which I think is notable in light of the fact that in the committee there have been a certain interpretation, but we've all worked very well. And in fact, at our final meeting today, Chair Ford did report or discuss the report we had today. And I noted that I would offer a reservation with the greatest respect to Chair Ford and colleagues on it. I believe I wish to suggest that our responsibility includes or is almost captured very significantly by the second result regarding evaluation looking into allegations of impropriety involving the use of resources and business activity of auxiliary organizations, as well as the improper governmental activities regarding the violation of the spirit of the CSU's speed policy. While a great, a significant effort has been made to seek a response from an array of parties, I believe that we should continue to seek response from parties other than the ombudsman person or ombudsman. Because the second result was direct attention to past activities, and the fourth result was, by the way, regarding attention to implying a revision of campus policies regarding student referenda, which looks to the future. I believe that an evaluation that the ombudspersons are oriented mainly toward conflict resolution, which is a very, very worthy objective, and of course, the kind of objective that is admirably addressed by the vision of this policy. However, I do believe that attention should be directed to the allegations to which the second result clause refers. And now, this is that this would be an evaluation that is not one of advocacy, and establishing evidence that impropriety did occur, but rather instead assessing the evidence about these in regard to these allegations, whether they are valid or not. In other words, not to advocate a particular interpretation, but to make a fact-based, evidence-based determination regarding the referendum itself. So I just wanted to put my view into the record, and I do invite the Senate to offer, members of the Senate to offer their own response to either or both of the issues taken.
discussion about this, I think we need a motion, and I think the appropriate motion would be to move to overrule the chair, overrule my finding that the task force has completed its task. And if you wish to do that, then I think we would move to add it to the agenda, which is the next, our next task is to approve the agenda. So do you wish to make such a motion?
I would like to make that motion. Only I would prefer that it would, the word got overruled, while I understand not intended to make evaluation, for example, of your report. But I don't know of a better verb, actually, but I wish to move that the committee continue the execution of the charge that considered the second draw plot. As I discussed.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is ask if there's any objection to adding that to the agenda as an additional business item. And then when we get to that business item, I would ask Chair-elect Purser to run the meeting so I can participate in the discussion. Well, that's good. That's a good question. Is there a second to Noel's motion?
Second.
Okay. Okay, so is there any objection to inserting that onto the agenda?
Possible for you to please read us the charge.
I can. Would you like that now or when we get to that agenda item?
Well, the charge committee is simply that they write letters that I guess I would object to this.
Okay. So I'll read the clauses in the original resolution. So the title is Resolution Requesting Letter Sent to an Impartial Third Party Requesting an Evaluation of Recent Student Referendum. Resolved that the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University draft a letter to an impartial third party requesting an evaluation of recent student referendum on increasing student fees to fund a new student center, and resolved that the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University requests specifically that the evaluation should look into allegations of improprieties involving use of resources and business activities of auxiliary organizations, as well as improper governmental activities regarding violations of the spirit of the CSU student policy and Executive Order 1054, and the additional two resolved clauses aren't relevant to the charge.
Further point of information, did the letters that were sent out include what was asked to be specifically?
Yes. Yes, the letters actually all included the resolution itself. It was attached.
Then I guess I had to look at it.
Okay. So, let's see. Okay, yes.
I don't remember what the third resolve clause is not relevant. I thought it was.
The third resolve clause is just how the task force should be constructed.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Terry and John, so what do you say?
Sorry.
It's before the agenda is adopted, so I can just majority
okay.
To put it on the agenda. So because we haven't already adopted the agenda, this just requires a majority vote to put it on the agenda. And, so I think what I don't know is whether that's a discussable motion. Anybody else, parliamentary expert out there? Well, since we'll talk about it until we find out that it's not discussable. So anybody want it? So any discussion on the issue of adding this motion to the agenda? All right, then that's a moot point. So, Richard, Senator Sangha.
It's an agenda or program is
to add that discussion of I feel like adding it to the agenda when we have evidence that it's been completed. I feel like it's been dispensed with, and that this in effect becomes new business. And I'd like to see that kind of business come up through the executive committee channels as any new business.
What we're discussing is whether to add Senator Burns' motion to overrule my ruling that the task force is done to the agenda. Senator Cabanas.
I don't see where we lose by having a discussion for a motion that a senator wants to bring on the floor, regardless of whether you support it or not. I think that it's beneficial to let somebody bring forward a motion. I would support bringing forward a motion, even if I knew in advance I was going to vote against it.
Senator,
I mean, it's not from a parliamentary standpoint. I think this is a little vague in terms of what's going on here. That I think Senator Burns has suggested putting on a motion to discuss the role of this task force and to give official sanction to it continuing to operate. And that could in of itself sort of be seen as adding something to the agenda. We can discuss what we'd like to do that. On the other hand, you have sort of reported as chair that you're ruling that the task force has completed its task or going to call for the task force to be dissolved. And Senator Burns could appeal from the ruling of the chair, which then doesn't really give us the choice of whether we want to discuss it today or not. So I'm sort of thinking that we should do this, and it's kind of a question of how we do it best to continue and to allow the business of the Senate to be achieved today.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Good point. So I think that we'll go ahead and so I think that's where we are. So no, the motion's on the table. So the motion on the table is to overrule my ruling.
Appeal your
ruling. Okay, so he's appealing my ruling to the body, and the body will have to vote on whether to affirm my ruling that the task force is done or vote it down and uphold the appeal. Charge the committee with further work. So that's the motion before the floor. We're talking about that now. It's no longer a question of whether it goes on the agenda. We're talking about it now. So any more comments? Actually, you need to run this.
Yes.
I inquired of the president whether that was something he would do, and he declined.
I would like to start off by saying that I've enjoyed working with the people in this task force and support Senator Burns' description of that work and relationships on it. And I would speak strongly against this appeal and support the chair's ruling. The second resolved clause doesn't, in fact, talk to the task force's work. It's talking to what the Senate wants to accomplish in this. The task force was created to draft a letter. We drafted a letter. I would even argue, and in fact probably did at some point in this proceedings, that we were going beyond our charge and even identifying third parties, although I think it also made sense for us to do that. But that wasn't even strictly speaking within our charge. We've identified one. We had, unfortunately, don't have the option of bringing multiple choices to the Senate and saying, which do you prefer? We tried to get to that point and weren't successful. We've got somebody that has not yet said no to send this to. And in pursuing this avenue, we're not precluding coming back to other potential parties in the future if this doesn't pan out. So I would say that task force's work is done. We now turn it over to the auditor group to see whether they pick it up or not. And if they don't, then somebody else can decide if it's worth pursuing some other vehicle, some other app, including a retired ombudsman person and what would be involved. happen under our system.
Perhaps Senator Lee could explain to me if there is still this additional action you're describing. Can that take place?
My response would be it can, because this is the Senate's resolution of an evaluation that the Senate has requested. The task force was simply convened to draft the letter to start this process in motion. Done that, and hopefully we'll start motion. If it turns out not to do what that motion ceases before it gets to the point we would like it to, then there's nothing to stop either a new group from coming or the chair from reaching the task force to pursue another avenue that I wouldn't mind pursuing if it were really open and obvious right now. Other possibilities haven't been identified. The task force has worked hard to identify many options to pursue them, and most of those doors have been closed. This is the only one that not yet. Doesn't have serious impediments in the way like the Utah does.
Any further discussion? I would like further clarification on different on what exactly we're deciding, because I'm on the letter writing committee, and as I understand it, we're sending a letter because we heard that at least they're looking at our letter and the state auditor's office, that we're sending a request to them to consider our, you know, looking into the referendum. We also have a letter outstanding to the Sonoma County Grand Jury that we have just not heard back from them. And I suspect the way they work, they decide to do it, they will do it. The grand jury just decides what they'll take up. And I think that's out of our control. I think the issue is that there may be a couple of other possibilities to pursue for an impartial third party that might be worthwhile into the next month or two. That, and maybe Senator Byrne could clarify that, but that's my own, that's, to me, the one thing that's possible is there may be an additional impartial third party that we haven't yet contacted that has come up, or that may come up, that we could contact. In terms of the ombudsman, that person, it seems that would need a little, the organization for that is beyond, it is, I agree, beyond the scope of this committee, and I personally plan to continue to look into what would be involved with bringing an ombudsperson on, and to bring that information back to the Senate for information at some point once I do that. But I don't think that's really the issue for this, but maybe Senator Byrne could clarify. Is that the reason you want to continue so that we can contact yet another impartial, potentially impartial party?
Believe that, yes.
Chair Ford.
My interpretation of what we're deciding is whether the task force's scope was a narrow one, which was to send a letter to an impartial third party requesting an evaluation, which is the exact text of the resolution, or was in fact to ensure that evaluation takes place, which is a much broader scope than I understood the resolution to mean. There will always be additional potential third parties that we can contact, and I'm worried myself about getting into a case of a task force with a never-ending charge. So my interpretation of the charge was to interpret the text literally. The charge is to send a letter to an impartial third party to carry that out faithfully, not send it to an obvious sham of a third party, and that's why we did additional work beyond just looking somebody up in the phone book and sending a letter. But once we've sent a letter to a realistic potential third party, my interpretation is that we've fulfilled the charge, and my argument is that doesn't preclude the Senate from giving further direction to a different group. So if somebody wishes to bring forth further direction to pursue this, the Senate could decide to charge somebody else.
As I've listened to this conversation, it seems to me that the task force has been extremely diligent in doing what it was that they were charged to do. They've written letters, they've contacted a number of people. I'm not sure what action the task force should have taken to force somebody to, for free, come in here and adjudicate this issue. I don't really understand what more this task force could do. So I would like to support Chair Ford's ruling, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of the job.
I would say that through that independent, from what I gathered from the initial resolution, no end date is not concrete that this is done. And Chairman Ford has said, to do this resolution, that the resolution now, chop it up 12, 25, or part, we get the end.
I don't see any further discussion. So, parliamentarian has informed me, because I was a little confused myself, that when we vote on this, if you vote yes, then you are voting in support of the chair's ruling. If you vote no, then you are voting to appeal. You're voting in support of the appeal. Okay? Everybody clear on that? So all those in favor of the motion on the floor, in favor of supporting the chair's ruling, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed?
No.
I think the ayes have it. This is a majority vote, so thank you. Thank you. And on behalf of the not chair, thanks to the task force for the work, because I do believe that due diligence is an appropriate phrase. This work.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take my label back. All right. See what we have to get by with Laurel's not here. All right. So now we're on to approval of the agenda. I'm going to do the two EPC items first thing, because EPC Chair Galinsky is pretty soon. So we're going to first do business item 4. And then the EPC report. Are there any other items that need time certains? Okay. Any proxies today? And who are you?
For Tom Buckley for Science and Technology.
So Rich Whitkiss is Tom Buckley's proxy today, the Science and Technology Senator. And let's see, any other changes to the agenda? Any objection to?
Oh, yes. Information.
Yes.
Is the reports that are being prioritized for Senator Galinsky, including the information item about the academic conference, presentation of that.
Yes, Senator Galinsky, can you do that as part of your report? Mention that. Okay, yes, thank you. All right, any objection to considering the agenda approved? Okay, that's done. We have a set of minutes that was ready to go. Remember? Okay, we're not going to approve any minutes today because I can't remember if we have any to approve. Okay. No correspondence to speak of. And so we'll go on to the EPC item. So let's first do business item number 4, the GE unit policy. Senator Galinsky.
There is an extant GE unit policy. It is a policy. The GE subcommittee was tasked, last spring, by the Senate to do an investigation of impact of a unit policy and some statistics as to how many students were taking, how many units, and how many seats were filled. Algorithm was developed that's now part of this policy, and I'm going to ask Mike Smith, who's chair of the GE subcommittee, to explain to you a little bit more detail about how the algorithm was arrived at based on past data past. But basically the idea is that this would provide for what we call a cap and trade policy to prevent, and I'm not trying to insult anybody, but to prevent what is known as
I'm Mike Smith, the chair of the GE subcommittee.
to the GE curriculum that most are designed to have three-unit courses only, particularly the D and E areas, so that students are not faced with taking four-unit courses, very many four-unit courses in those areas, thereby sort of having a de facto inflation of the number of units they get out of their GE overall. And so you could have it, you know, currently it's 50 units that you're supposed to get, but if you took all four-unit courses in all of the subcategories for D and E, you would end up with substantially more. And so I did an analysis of the registration data for the last seven semesters and tracked a percentage, basically the percentage of seats that are three units versus the total number of seats that are offered in each of the sub areas. And as you can see in the chart of unit creep, the three-unit percentage is plotted, and there are no overwhelming trends in the pattern. And the average, you add them all together, is a little bit less than, or a little bit more than 83%. What that means is that if a student were to basically roll the dice and at random select from the GE pattern, that on average, they would come across something like 0.88 extra units added to their GE pattern. That's not accounting for the fact that many of these four-unit courses are majors courses, specialty upper-level courses that students are sort of double-counting within their majors anyway. And so our determination was that this isn't a substantial problem, and it's not really inflating too many people's GE patterns. However, we wanted to place some sort of a limit on it, so that it did not become a problem in the future. And so we devised this idea of capping the three-unit percentage, or actually putting a floor on it of 83%, and then tracking every semester just to see how things are going. And basically, that's what the policy is proposing to do. If that threshold were to be crossed, then GE subcommittee would no longer be able to approve courses for areas D and E. And the process of coming up with this policy, with the social sciences and science and technology curriculum committees, and they're on board for being able to basically help force this policy. And as of now, there is no flood of four-unit courses from any department or school, so it's a very conservative policy.
So this is in your packet. There's a page that includes the side by side of the current what's called three unit policy and the proposed new GE unit policy. And now the following pages is the evaluation and the frequently asked questions. And this is done in response to a charge given to the GE subcommittee last spring when they proposed a different version of the GE unit policy. So Senator Shan,
I don't see that this would have any delay effect on.
Senator Brannan.
Yes. On the sheet that compares the current three-unit policy with the new three-unit policy proposed, on the right-hand column, in the third paragraph, third from the bottom line, it says, if they are pedagogically justified in the three-unit seat percent cap of 83.3% maintained, I'd like to say that that's not a cap on the number of three-unit. It's a floor, it's a minimum. That word cap should either be minimum, or we could say that there's a four-unit cap of 67%. To say a cap on the three-unit seat would confuse people greatly, because it's simply not a cap, it's a minimum, it's a floor. So I move that word cap be changed to minimum.
Well, let me remind you, we're in a first reading, so just...
I encourage you to please consider changing the people's not that, that's a question.
Okay. Michael.
Oh, just to respond, I'm not sure how it happened, but that wording was changed. Document that I sent. This somehow the old version stuck through.
So when it comes back for a second reading, we'll make sure that's changed. Senator Ludman.
I was concerned about the same sentence. There were several places in the document that talked about the word. The only one that I see is actually
Senator Wickes.
As I read this as policy, I'm a little questioning the new one in terms of both the second, mostly the third paragraph. Policy is a guiding idea, but the basic principle. But that now becomes really a procedure which is fixed in stone in terms of areas A and C will only contain four unit courses from now forever, versus that says in the future, if someone in A and C wants to come up with a different course structure, this whole policy is going to have to change again. So in terms of writing policy, I would think that what's in that third paragraph needs to be condensed down to what is true policy, take out what is really just sort of procedure. And with that, in terms of the old policy, in terms of the general education courses that had the exceptions are now gone. So that means the exceptions are gone.
So, you have both those issues, Mike?
I'm a little unclear about the business about area C.
Here?
How you'd like that to be worded.
Basically, it's not policy. It's setting in stone what is current practice. And that's the difference from policy. So in the future, practice changes. That means this policy would have to change. It doesn't allow flexibility in practice.
So I would recommend perhaps that if you're still wondering sort of what Senator Wickes' issue is, that you get together between now and the second reading to try to clarify that. All right. Let's see. Senator Reese.
I think the G subcommittee did an admirable job with the tasks that were given to them by the Senate. And this task, lots of time and voted against it. And still have a lot of concerns with this policy, and Senator Wickes' concerns start to address those that are overlapped with them as well. I'm not sure it's not clear how this 83% is going to be measured. Is it that semester, is the previous semester, is a rolling 3-year average? Doesn't seem to take into account the forecast of the effect of the new classes that will be created. So a department or a school put forward a whole slew of classes at the same time to change from 3 to 4 units, and we weren't taking into account forecast of seats, then there's no basis for not approving them, even though after the effect, no more would be approved. Doesn't deal with reallocating seats. If a department had the audacity to put forward a 5-unit course, there's no policy basis on which to reject it. And then, as I raised at the executive committee, by treating D area as a whole and not as sub areas, you can still meet this 83% and still have structural unit creep, because students can't, in fact, take classes at random from D. They need a D1, a D2, a D3, a D4, and a D5. And if some area has all 4-unit classes, then they necessarily have 1-unit creep, 90% of the seats in total are 4-unit classes. So I don't like this policy. I continue not to like this policy. Again, not having anything to do with
Senator Rumsford.
Just as a point, perhaps a clarification around the issue of whether or not the first couple of sentences there on A, C, and D are policy. I think what we propose is simply to cut those. Those are matters of argumentation to try to make those of us who are in areas D and E feel better about the fact of being singled out for scrutiny, right? So they're not. That's not actually a policy. That's something to try to make us feel like, okay, they tell about other people too. So is that what you're saying, basically? Okay, yeah. And then I wondered actually about the. I appreciate that you're taking this on, and it's obviously challenging. But I wondered about the question of the 8.3% as well. We are encouraged to grow our classroom sizes as much as possible, straining pedagogy to fill room sizes to suit, various demands and needs of this university. It seems like numbers of seats could change substantially over time. And so there could be a situation where, for example, one GE that's at a, I don't know, 36 or 48 cap currently now manages to get one of the 128 rooms, right? And it could totally throw off the numbers for everybody else. And then some poor department that happens to be bringing through their attempt, their very pedagogically valid attempt to go from 3 to 4 units in that one semester, could suddenly find themselves squeezed out. So I'm not sure about the arrival at the number and how the number is going to work. I'd rather see something, a number that was somehow arrived at by a constant creation of snapshots, I suppose, that moves over time.
Senator Cabanas.
I don't know if you're planning to answer the questions at the end, but I just was wondering also about the exceptions, how they figure in or not in the new policy, particularly the last one on Hutchins.
Go ahead and answer that or just make a note to consider it.
So I will start with that. The in the revised version that I sent to Armand, the Hutchins statement at the end of the previous policy was added to the right side diagram. Going back to the question of why pick a running average, whether to use a running average, whether to use the previous year's numbers. Part of the issue is it's not possible to take a look at these numbers until after the semester has already occurred. And this feature of classes getting larger and getting smaller is something that if you look, when you look at the record, that is happening all the time. But it happens to such an extent that it's amazing how stable it ends up being. That the dark line that's above the dashed line is basically how it all comes out in the wash. And finally, the number 83.3% is well noted to be arbitrary. It was picked for the purpose of saying that we are restricting it to one unit of unit. Basically, that it's a 50 unit policy. There's one unit that it can be increased by. That could be set to any number that want it. And that I think would be a decision that's better placed in the hands of the Senate rather than a subcommittee of a committee. And so that, whatever the number you guys want for that is perfectly good. I think that pretty much.
We're almost out of time for our first reading, so I'm going to get the last three that are on the speaker's list, and you might just have to make some notes and continue with a second. Senator Galinsky.
Frankly, I'm not sure if we're putting this in the crosshairs or we're splitting here. The real policy is in paragraph 2. Paragraph 3, I would put in a request of the Senate to give some statistical feed. But if you think about the former Super Bowl indicator of the direction the stock market has been improved, and we could easily say the past statistics on student union creep. May not necessarily be indicative or representative of the future reality. So my suggestion would be that we take paragraph 3 out and put it in a rationale page. And just the policy should be, the guiding principle is that students should be able to complete the curriculum within 15 minutes and leave it broad as that. That would be my suggestion for James.
Senator Sengas.
In policies, if you want to have explanatory reasons to set the context, preambles are often the place to put it rather than in the meat of the policy. So you'll see many other policies that way. So maybe the parts that others have talked about as being excised because they're not actually policy might suitably go into a preamble that sets the context.
Senator Witkus.
Pass.
So that concludes the first reading. So obviously lots of issues here still to take back. And so if you have further feedback for the GE subcommittee, please email Michael Babb-Smith and let them know what you're thinking. All right, thank you. Okay, Senator Galinsky would like to give an EPC report, including the academic calendar.
Yes, Chair, what I would. EPC is considered a university four-year calendar. We are currently in the stage of re-wordsmithing the rationale for that four-year calendar, but the reality is the calendar is not going to substantially change given the fact that we're stuck with the calendar we've got. But we wanted to bring to you the 2012-13 calendar, at least for information items today, mainly because of the fact that a lot of program departments are already making plans. The athletics department will make plans next year. The youth, performing arts, theater arts. Of course, any program that has career counseling or other types of advising want to make plans for next year. We need to have a calendar pretty much in place for 12-13. Rationale, you know, can be supplied to at a later date. We're also currently under consideration, and part of the scatological reference of the change of music to be from the AFPM. We passed that. We're going to send that out to the executive committee. And we're also working with the Athletic Advisory Committee on developing a policy for proctoring off-campus tests, exams, which could have some wide-ranging ramifications, not just for athletic and performing arts programs that have students off campus during exam time, particularly in the spring when the baseball, softball season, championship games, but also for distance learning and online courses where students have to take exams. So we'll be working on that with the
So on the calendar, I want to point out that our practice is that the Senate approves the calendar guidelines. So those are kind of the rules that govern how the calendar is laid out. And revised set of guidelines will be coming from EPC early next semester. But the Academic Affairs Office puts together the actual calendar each year based on those guidelines. So these calendar for next year that's before you is put together to reflect the soon to emerge new guidelines. It's a little backwards, but we need to get this calendar out so we can plan for this. So, any questions for Senator Galinsky? Oh, Senator Rumsfeld.
I actually have no idea where this goes, procedure, but I wanted to bring up the idea of moving the faculty retreat to a different, to the end of the summer, now that we have a shortened fall, winter break. I don't know where that is. Let's go and talk about the calendar. I don't know.
I'm going to say, can you bring that to executive, like email me and
sure.
Ask if we can talk about it in the executive committee, because that's pretty much a function of the chair.
Okay.
Pretty much. And we'll, I think that's, strictly speaking, that's not, that doesn't affect people's planning for the semester itself very much. So I think we can go ahead and approve this, and next year's chair would still have the authority to be around. All right. Senator, take that.
In previous years, we started school on Wednesday. So next year, we're starting on Tuesday. Because I did fall on a 2-day international student orientation, Monday, Tuesday, school starts Wednesday. I could cram it into one day, which is what I'm going to have to do probably. But the spring is problematic, and it's problematic for me this spring as well, because we're starting on the Tuesday after MLK, so my orientation is on the Friday prior to school strike, so it's a little bit cost prohibitive for those students. They have to get hotel rooms, they don't live on campus, so they have to come, so it's not great for them, and so if it was possible to start school on just with one working day for us to hold orientation and deal with registration issues and having to figure out cards and all the other things we need to do, giving me that one work day to do that would be really great. And even 2 days would be better. But we can do it. Starting on Monday is not my favorite thing for that reason.
Other Senator Watershed.
Did I hear correctly that the DA music should be changed to DA or
replacing entirely the VA. It would be some students, who, particularly those who are majoring in certain instruments or voice, be have the opportunity to receive a Bachelor of Music, which is more in the currency of those for those students who need to go on to future graduate studies in music, and is increasingly becoming recognized as a currency for a career for so this would require no change, no resources, no change in faculty. No, the only thing would be.
But that's not before us now.
That's not
to come.
Before you now. It won't be before you until sometime early.
All right. Any further, Senator Fabs?
I just have a question. So if we're revising the guiding policies for the calendar, is that place where a discussion of having the entire week Thanksgiving off, that where it should take place?
Yes, that's where it would take place, and it would not affect next year's calendar.
That'll
be on the
policy.
Right, that'll be on the agenda early in the spring semester. Further questions? All right. Thank you, Senator Zielinski. Okay, let's move on to business item number one, the resolution regarding protest at the university. Carolyn Purser.
Hello. Very much like the GE unit policy, I'm afraid the version of this, the replacement version or the modified version for the second reading that's in the packet is inaccurate. This was a working draft that we were working on, so the one that you have on the table in front of you is actually the correct text. Just to give you a little bit of a reminder, this is a second reading. We brought the resolution last time. Everybody gave us some great feedback on modifications. There were a couple of key issues that a variety of senators wanted addressed. They included making it very clear that nothing bad or negative had actually happened at Sonoma State that needed to be fixed, that in fact what we were doing was commending Sonoma State's handling of the entire process, particularly in contrast with the rather stark differences in terms of what unfolded on the UC campuses almost simultaneously. We also had people making sure that we found a way to mention that we already do have policies that support both academic freedom and freedom of speech, and policies regarding responses to demonstrations and to protests on the campus. And there was another request from several people to make it very clear that we were in fact condemning what had happened on the UC campuses. This was a statement that very strongly came out against how that process had gone forward. In addition to those changes and modifications, and thanks everybody who sent me email with suggested text and things like that, I also took this back to the original drafting group, which included Cynthia Boas, political science, who's an expert in nonviolent protest and also serves as co-chair of the Senate Diversity Subcommittee, as well as Brantley Bryant, who is the chair of the Academic Freedom Subcommittee, to have them hear your response because they weren't here when you were giving me the input. And then last but not least, the Tuesday following our first reading, Associated Students brought forward their own resolution, and they helped with one other comment that a number of senators had made, which was that student protests are not the only kinds of protests that occur on university campuses, and that perhaps the academic senate's language should broaden simply to campus protests, which worked out very nicely because, of course, Associated Students' language, the language of Associated Students' resolution, is quite appropriately focused on student protests and the experience that they had with the protests that week before Thanksgiving, which were in the terms of their resolution, and I won't speak directly to that, but if you have questions, drafted and are here today, so ask them. You should have copies of both of those resolutions on the table in front of you. And you'll notice that there's a resolved clause that's been added to our resolution, the Academic Senate resolution, and I believe it's resolution, resolved clause 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, where we support the Associated Students resolution. I actually worked with Paul Ramey to use some of the language from their whereas clauses to create the written rationale that the Academic Senate also asked be accompanied by the second reading of this resolution. So that helps you understand, I think, a little bit where this new text came from. I've tried to accommodate everyone's suggestions and particularly language and sort of topical issues. We've added an endorsement of the Associated Students resolution, and we've added the rationale.
Conversation. Senator Witness.
Thank you. I understand the desire for having such a resolution, and it's great that it's very affirmative, especially in terms of free speech, really what it's about. And I think it helps all that written is directed towards that. My only concern would be that the fifth resolution, all the other resolutions are affirmative and positive, and the only one that comes across is negative, and it uses what could be seen as inflammatory language, as an excessive force. And I think the Senate, if it's going to use language like that, should be very careful, because on one hand, they're saying we're very affirming, on the other hand, they come along with the term, which is, in my mind, without even thinking back up, can be very negative. The second is being used against our system. Campus is the university. So I think that is too strong of a resolution, and I think much better and much positive if that one resolved all the things.
Senator Witness. So would you like to make that a motion?
Yes, I would like to make a motion to get resolved.
Been moved and seconded. So now the item on the floor is the removal of the fifth resolved clause. Discussion. Senator Brandt.
I don't think we should remove it. I think I would support maybe rewording it that the text of the Academic Senate says concerned about the inflammatory actions taken by the police at those events, but I would not support it.
Senator Shannon.
If I could do this, I would move to amend the amendment to remove the word excessive, which has legal implications that I'm hearing.
All right, so the motion on the floor now, right, which has not been seconded. Okay, that's been seconded. So, all right, so now we're discussing whether it's, yes, Senator Water.
Can we amend the motion?
Yes, that's okay. We can't go one layer further, and it's a little tricky, but I think we're okay at this level. So so the motion on the floor now is to amend the fifth resolved clause by removing the word excessive as an alternative to removing the clause altogether. Yes.
Are we just trying to amend the amendment and then do those?
Discussing whether to change.
Right. We're discussing whether to change the motion from deleting the clause to amending it by deleting the word excessive.
It's really excessive.
Right, which is a form of amendment. So right now we're discussing whether we want, instead of deleting the clause, to remove the word excessive from the clause. Senator Lee.
I supported would support the original amendment in part for the reasons it was offered, but also in part that it also this the resolution captures both the cooperation of the student and the administration. And that clause seems to suggest that only the administration on these campuses did anything that might have led to the activities that have been described originally as excessive force and perhaps as just force, and loses that balance that students there, unlike students here, didn't cooperate with authorities in terms of helping the campus continue to run its operations in a safe way. And I don't think that the motion to amend the amendment addresses that sufficiently for my taste. That it still says whether it's excessive force or just force, just is still unbalanced in its approach toward campus authorities. My preference.
Okay. Charlie, first.
I think I would speak to retain some version of this this resolve clause for several reasons. One, this resolve clause was actually added to the original resolution at the request of senators who were here when the first reading was held. So in some part, I don't know if those people are even here today and they can speak to that, but in part I'm responding to a request from other senators, in fact, to sharpen, or no, the exact phrase was, please make it explicit that we are condemning the actions that were taken on the UC. It's also the case that this reflects language in the student resolution, which reads, specifically, whereas students at UC Davis were pepper sprayed by campus police while nonviolently protesting, and students at UC Berkeley were struck with batons as they nonviolently protested. And in the spirit of trying to make the two resolutions convergent, and the fact that I had senators asking me to add that language, that's where this language came from, just as context for the language, for the resolve clause itself. So I have no problems with amending the language of the resolve clause, but the specificity of referring very much to what happened on the UC campuses as something that was not an appropriate response is something that's been requested by other members of the board.
Pastor Winter.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, I mean, we are basically discussing whether or not to remove the word excessive. Once we vote on that, then we can vote on whether to remove the entire clause or not. So in other words, those who may be in favor of removing the entire clause because of the word excessive, but I think at this point, that's the motion on the floor is addressing the word excessive.
Well, the motion on the floor is to, instead of remove the clause, remove the word excessive. So if we vote yes on the current amendment, then the motion to remove the clause is no longer before us. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So if you want to remove the clause, you'll vote no on the current motion and then vote yes on the motion to remove the clause. Senator Rumsfeld.
I don't think that we should, as an academic senate, condemn wholesale the use of force as a term. Although I do strongly believe that there is a relatively wide consensus, including recognition from campus authorities at both UC Davis and UC Berkeley, but certainly at UC Davis, that something profoundly wrong occurred that was excessive in terms of the policing in response to a nonviolent protest. So the word excessive to me, while perhaps having a certain legal overtone that hasn't been tried in court, is widely acknowledged, including by campus authorities at both places, as something that is, if not true, under very, very serious investigation, including worldwide media scrutiny. So I would reject the elimination of excessive, and I would reject the elimination of the clause.
Senator Lees.
No.
Okay. Senator Batsky.
I'd be against removing the word excessive as well, because it says the president, obviously it was excessive. Removing excessive, less than the force, and sometimes, unfortunately, force is necessary. There's for kind of set yourself up for condemning forever to save it.
Okay, so I'd like to get back to the main motion soon, if we could. So this is, we're still debating whether to replace the motion to remove the clause with the motion to amend it by removing the word excessive. Senator Shan.
I would point out that this refers to force that was used in particular at these two campuses in November 2011, but it's referring to a specific incident that reported.
Senator Rabascio.
But then it does say president.
All right, so I think we're ready for a vote. So let me make this clear. If you vote yes on this motion, that means that the motion on the floor will be the motion to amend clause, resolve clause 5 by removing the word excessive. If you vote no, the motion on the floor will be to strike the fifth clause. So all those.
Point of order.
Yes.
So if you want either of those things.
Yeah, you both know. Yeah. So all those in favor of the amendment to the amendment, that is to make the motion on the floor, remove the word excessive from the fifth clause. In favor of that, raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, that fails. So the motion on the floor is to remove the fifth resolved clause, and we can have a conversation on that if there's any more need.
Point of order.
Yes.
At this point, is it okay to make the amendment to that amendment?
It is. I don't see anybody. Senator Brannon.
I would like to say, with all due respect, writers of this motion, I think the students actually did a better job than we did. And I would like to move that we simply endorse their resolution, and our resolution to send it. Otherwise, it's almost identical, except it's slightly more inflammatory language. So I move that.
Okay, so that is not an amendment to the motion currently on the floor. So first we have to finish the amendment that's on the floor, which is to strike the fifth resolved clause, and then you can make your motion to substitute. So, any discussion on removing the fifth resolved clause? All those in favor of removing the fifth resolved clause, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, nays have it. So the fifth resolved clause is still there. Okay, Senator Sengas was next on this list ages ago.
Ages ago, we returned this direction. We brought this before FSAC this afternoon, and basically, from the perspective of FSAC's purview, especially as overseeing committee of the Academic Freedom Subcommittee, we saw no issues with this with regard to academic freedom. We support the ideas and the efforts on voting for the academic freedom, we didn't see it as jeopardizing that. Doesn't speak to where we spent most of our time. Or, well, that's that.
Right. Senator Brannon?
Yes, I would like to move that we remove all of our resolve clauses except the second of the last one that says, yeah, you know, that enforce this on this, etc. I think they're wording as far as the time for it's more like just a statement of that.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. So the motion is to remove all but the second to last resolved clause. Senator Byrne.
Thank you. I believe it's important to, in order to make a proper decision regarding this proposal, that we be clear as to whether or not the Associated Students' resolution would appear this academic senate's record of resolution. For example, if we go online and look at the resolution passed by the academic senate, we know precisely what the academic senate say if the Associated Students resolution is not included in our online record, all we'll have is an affirmation that affirmation, the substance of the Associated Students resolution. So I guess what I would like some clarification about is would the Associated Students resolution, it should, if we had a question.
I'm going to insert the phrase reprinted below at the end of the resolve clause that of necessity appeared. Senator Shan.
I wholeheartedly endorse the ASI action, and yet I would speak against this substitution. I would prefer it to be seen that two debating bodies, both independently based on these principles, came to a very similar conclusion.
Senator Mukherjee.
I would absolutely agree as well. That I think it's important that we thoroughly place say these things, but also mention that we resolve several things in this where they only two things. That's only the two lines of the specific mention for events at UC campuses. It's just a whereas where we specifically resolve. I see that everybody thinks that this is language, but I guess I'm in the minority. I don't actually agree. Right. I in fact think that it's a necessary thing to say. Part of why I support the resolution.
Statewide Senator Nelson.
I agree with Senator Shannon Fuji for slightly different reasons. It seems to me that the third and fourth result was his comment about special role. Protected free speech, relevant free speech to the academic. That's fundamental to what you do, and I think it's fundamental to this
question. Chair Ackerman.
I'd also like to remind you that one of the differences that, again, was requested last time at the first meeting, the first language that was brought forward in the original resolution from this body only referred specifically to student protest, and senators requested that the language be broadened to include all protests on a university campus because we felt, as I understood the emails that I got, that there might be more than student protests in the future, and that those protests are also protected by academic freedom and the rights of free speech and assembly. So there is a critical there. I have to admit, we worked to make the language of the two sound as resonant as possible, but I've already told Paul he did a better job than we did.
Senator Walker.
If I remember correctly, when the resolution was brought to us last time, there was some discussion that we are actually going to resolve the process, not nationality. And when we look at the PSI resource clauses, they are very general in their intent, and all the various clauses would actually not be printed online once it is approved. While the resolution that we are voting on has changed, has integrated into the resource clause many of the aspects that this PSI are. So for that reason, in order to maintain the negative message.
So the two bodies use the different formats for resolutions. We've gone away from the whereas resolved because of the confusion about whether the whereas language is part of what we're voting on. AS still includes the Associated Students still includes the entire text when they publish their resolutions. So the motion is to remove all but the second to last resolved clause. Is there any more discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor of removing all but the second to last resolved clause, raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, so the resolution still stands unaltered, I believe. So we're back to the main motion. More discussion on the main motion. Senator Sanghas.
Since the language of the fifth clause is the most problematic, could we maybe lift the specificity from the whereas of student? student one, saying the use of pepper spray, nonviolent, whatever, you know, use of clubs against nonviolent, that addressed the concerns. I would suggest we do that kind of.
Care to make a motion to that effect, or
I'm too tired to be frank. So I would trust somebody else.
So he has thrown down the gauntlet. Does anybody wish to get up? Senator Manis, you missed. No, he hasn't made a motion.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say that I really like the work on this, and I think much clearer what was motivating it. Because when I read it the first time at the last Senate meeting, my first thought when I read about demonstrations on campus was I've been on the picket line on November 8th, and so I'm thinking, and then because that was much more militant, if you will, than some of the student protests. When I saw them, the people were sitting around talking and everything. So I do appreciate that it is more inclusive of all parts of the university and the community.
Senator Wilson.
I suspect I must have missed something, but I was wondering why we're not mentioning the events at the Board of Trustees meeting on November 16th. That was as significant as the Davis stuff and more rules for us.
Motion is open to amendment. Senator McCauley.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually really like monetary language. It's not monetary damage shots by facing. That's just one thing. Well, I'm going to make the motion, Senator Senhas. Which is to, if the fifth result was say the use of excessive force, say use of pepper spray by campus guards, paper gloves by authorities during campus.
May I suggest batons, which is the word used in
yes.
That one? So is there a second for that motion?
I second that.
Okay, so the motion is to make the fifth resolve clause read, resolve that the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of pepper spray by campus authorities at UC Davis and batons by campus authorities at UC Berkeley during November 2011 campus protests. Is there a discussion of that motion? Senator Brand. I'm getting there. Okay, so here's what I think I have. Resolved that the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of pepper spray by campus authorities at UC Davis and batons by campus authorities at UC Berkeley during November 2011 campus protests by nonviolent protesters. How about campus nonviolent protests?
How about
nonviolent campus protests?
Thank you. 2011 nonviolent campus protests? I think that's what Chip said. Okay. Since the senator didn't write down the motion, we're just trying to get clear here. So is nonviolent, do you want that to modify protests or protesters? Let me try reading that again.
Ask one clarification, please.
Okay.
You wanted to say campus authorities or campus police? You read it saying campus authorities. Is that clear?
Campus authorities.
Is that
okay. Clear? So let me you read it again. Resolved that the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of pepper spray by campus authorities at UC Davis and batons by campus authorities at UC Berkeley during November 2011 nonviolent campus protests. Was that the motion? Was that the motion that a seconder thought they heard?
Sure.
Okay. So that's the motion before us, that amendment. Senator Shand.
I would speak against that because when I look at that video, I see other things that to me look excessive. So the message I would send that excessive force, period. I don't care if they hit them over the head with something besides a baton. So I think as it currently stands, excessive force in relation to protests, I would vote against this amendment.
Senator Winger.
I totally agree. This, you know, even though the batons and pepper spray might have gotten the most press, that presumes that was the only excessive force being used. So I would argue against this on the same grounds as outlined by Senator Shannon.
Senator Robson.
Yes, I have to support the same idea, though, that if we get specific, are we saying then, well, if Berkeley can use pepper spray, it'd be all right? Or are we saying that if they used cat prods or rubber bullets, that'd be okay? So I think excessive force. Anyone reading it knows what we're talking about. Getting specific, really getting beyond the realm of our authority.
Senator Rumsberg. Oh, Senator Lee. Senator Calavita.
Could we word it excessive force, including the use of pepper spray batons? In other words, have both so that we're pinpointing the kind of thing that we're referring to, but it also has a larger umbrella of excessive.
Right. So we could, if you wish to make a motion to amend the amendment and write it down. yes. So, Senator Calavita, do you wish to make that a motion?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Can you try stating it and then you work on writing it while we...
But the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of excessive force by campus authorities at UC Davis and UC Berkeley, including the like that. That the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of excessive force, including pepper spray by campus authorities at UC Davis and UC Berkeley during November 2011 campus protests. Peaceful campus protests.
Okay, are you intending to switch the word nonviolent to peaceful or leaving it as nonviolent?
Nonviolent.
Okay. So the motion is to change the fifth resolve clause to that resolve that the Academic Senate therefore condemn the use of excessive force, including pepper spray and batons, by campus authorities at UC Davis and UC Berkeley during November 2011 nonviolent campus protests. Is there a discussion of that amendment to the amendment? Oh, does it have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion of that? Senator Nelson.
I have a question and then a comment.
Senator Shanton.
I would argue against this amendment because if there weren't a motion on the floor, I would call the question on original language to call it into our wordsmithing, and I don't know that we have approved the addition of nonviolent or peaceful. While I support that, I think it's better, broader. I don't care if someone throws a rock or shot. So, to me, I like the simplicity of the current language, so I would not change.
Okay, so let me just clarify. There's an amendment on the floor, which was Senator McCauley's, which was to replace excessive force by pepper spray and batons and insert the word nonviolent. And then Senator Calavita has a motion to amend that amendment by, instead of getting rid of excessive force, inserting the phrase, including pepper spray and batons, but he left in the amendment the insertion of the word nonviolent, phrase nonviolent. So none of that's been included yet. That's still all on the floor. So there it is.
I would speak against this amendment, excuse me, anticipating all the amendments, because I agree with Senator Nelson that the elegance of it, the simplicity, is better than the specificity of the events that happened on those particular campuses, on those particular grades.
Senator Watershed. Okay. So, questions been called on this amendment to the amendment? Oh, there's nobody on the speaker's list. Anybody object to moving to a vote? All right. So we're going to a vote on the amendment to the amendment. So this is Senator Calavita's motion, which is to replace the existing amendment with an amendment that would change the fifth resolved clause to condemn the use of excessive force, including pepper spray and batons, by campus authorities at UC Davis and UC Berkeley during November 2011 nonviolent campus protests. Those in favor of that amendment to the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, that fails. So now the motion on the floor is Senator McCauley's motion to change the fifth resolved clause to condemn the use of pepper spray by campus authorities at UC Davis and batons by campus authorities at UC Berkeley during November 2011 nonviolent campus protests. Senator Wilson.
Now that we've dispatched to the amendment to the amendment, would it be possible for me to make a new amendment to the amendment?
Would it be?
I move that after UC Davis, we include the words "and the trustees meeting at the chancellor's office." And since it further goes on to state during November, that would give me to specify which event we're talking about.
Okay, so this amendment would insert the phrase "and the CSU
Board of Trustees meeting
at the Chancellor's office after UC Davis.
Yes. Because that was
the is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. So that's before us now. Yes.
This says campus authorities. Are they campus authorities at the Chancellor's office?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Lee.
So I would speak against that, although in kind of spirit I'm okay with it, but in the idea of campus protests and the situation here as opposed to what's going on in the chancellor's office with the meeting and the trustees, I don't think it's consistent with what we're trying to accomplish here. I think it's a different setting, a different set of authorities.
Senator Ramey.
I appreciate the concern about having excessive language and whatnot. I think as a student that excessive force was absolutely an appropriate term. If I were sitting there in a hallway or the sidewalk or whatever and got pepper sprayed, I would certainly view that as excessive. And I understand we don't want to get into legal this and that, but I think there's been some support for that. And I would encourage this body to move forward with what's been written. I think it very sends a message that I believe is intended to be sent. And at this point, there's kind of seems like we're kind of nitpicking over some the perfect wording, and there's some other items on the agenda that I think are very worthwhile to have some time this meeting before we move on to much break.
Okay, there's
a question.
Can I speak to my motion?
Not until we decide this question. So the question has been called and it's been seconded. So this is the question on Senator Wilson's amendment to insert the phrase about the CSU Board of Trustees meeting. All those in favor of ending discussion of that motion, raise your hand. Opposed, raise your hand. Okay, that motion carries. So now we move straight to a vote on inserting that clause. After UC Davis inserting the clause and the CSU Board of Trustees meeting at the Chancellor's office. All those in favor of inserting that clause, raise your hand. Opposed, raise your hand. Okay, that motion fails. So we're back to the amendment, which was somebody reminded me. Oh, this is Senator McCauley's original amendment. Yes, okay. So this is getting rid of the phrase excessive force and inserting pepper spray and batons, and inserting the word nonviolent. Senator Bass.
I would like to call the question.
Okay. Mr. Speaker. Okay. Is there any objection to moving straight to a vote? There was nobody on the speaker's list. Okay. So we go straight to a vote on the amendment. So this amendment is to insert, to replace excessive force by the particulars of pepper spray and batons. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Okay, that fails. So the language is back to its original.
Question? Second.
So, yeah, you need to get recognized before you call the question. Senator Roberts.
Way back. We're actually at the speaker.
We're back to the speaker's list on the main motion and
pass.
Okay. Is there anybody else? Senator Mann.
Call the question. Second.
Okay. Question's been called and seconded. All those in favor of ending debate on this motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so we go straight to a vote on the motion with no amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. All right, so let me ask, so apparently Senator Nelson had asked for a 415 time certain and I missed it. That's what we get. Not going to go up here. It's, I run amok. So we will move to that. I'm gonna see if we can do each of these first readings in 10 minutes because that's how much time we have left. So we're gonna see how that's going after 10 minutes. We'll do item number 3 first. So Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank the executive committee for the opportunity to have this on the Senate agenda. The resolution before you is a resolution about shared governance and statewide action for Senate chancellors.
It's at your table, not in your packet. It's a separate sheet, and I think there was just enough for about every other person.
The separate sheet is additions to the rationale, not the resolution itself, the packet. And it basically does 3 or 4 different things. One, the first couple of resolves reaffirm the importance of shared governance to diversity. The second thing this does is express concern about recent major curricular information on the part of the white administration made without consultation with shared governance. The third is that the statewide Senate has been subject to budget cuts severe enough to literally call into question whether or not we're going to have a statewide Senate this semester. I'll update that in just a second. And then the remaining calls into question, chances to the shared government and on that basis is leadership. The rationale follows the same logic by the details for these points. The most relevant information would be examples of the curricular initiatives and brief explanation of the budget cuts. And you have heard about all of these in one way or another over the last 5 years, give or take. The graduation initiative, the Early Start program, SB 1420, the American Institutions issue, and the CSU initiative are examples that are provided. With regard to the budget cuts to the statewide academic senate, it has been practiced the entire time I've been on the Senate, which I believe is my 7th year, right, which got proposed by you. We have received a 1-3 unit course for Easter semester that a 4-hour service in the work we do in the state of the Senate. Because of the budget cuts that we just found out about a week or two, we will now be allocating 1.5 units for spring semester instead of an entire. So what that means is that people like me, the assignment time becomes irrelevant to take the next course to fulfill
basis, they would back that extra half unit so we could all take one course, please. As of early this week, three campuses, campus administrations had agreed to do that, and on Monday or Tuesday, perhaps. The Executive Council of CSU, which is the Chancellor, all the Executive Vice Chancellors, and they follow the same pattern the administration does, President and Vice and the Presidents decided that campuses backfilling this assigned time would not be a good idea. Or, as I understand it, two different reasons. One is because of the shift of the system-wide responsibility to campuses, and two, because it was concerned about the equity, which is coming from what I don't know, of the equity of some campuses filling back time. Now, the kicker is that the statewide Senate was never notified of this decision, even though it had only been three campuses that had agreed to back assign time. We found out because one of the senators who had been promised to be assigned time was notified by his president that it wasn't going to happen because he needed from statewide. That senator emailed the statewide listener and said, oh, guess what, guys? This is what happened. So we were not given perspective or indication that there had been a decision directly affected our ability to function. Take it. So given the budget cuts and the three initiatives, we are in a position for shared governance, for academic responsibilities, or the second budget cuts, we literally are in a position where we do not know if we are going to have a Senate and whether or not we function. Does the language of the resolution of the budget cuts have our significant that we are now at the point? So I would appreciate your support for this resolution, comments you might have. To give you an idea of the executive committee's comments, they requested the extra paragraph on the functions of the statewide Senate, which is in the second sheet today. Senator Brennan, to my utter delight, absolute utter delight, that thought the language fits this off clause about the expression of serious concern about the chancellor's to share governance was too. So if at the point we ever get to the point where we're going to vote on this, in whatever it happens to be, I would welcome a change in that language to either sense your confidence or whatever. There is now talk informally statewide about the statewide Senate doing something similar. I have sent the resolution out. I tell the people that I'm supposed to do that. So I welcome your comments and thank you.
Senator Lutman.
I'm very reluctant to vote, but I will move to waive the first reading unless there's a serious rationale, but I think there is in this case. We have a very serious threat to shared governance. We're not going to be meeting. So I move to waive it.
So, waiver of the first reading has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion of that? Okay, all those in favor of waiving the first reading and moving to a second reading, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we're now in a second reading. So amendments are in order. Conversation. Senator Cabanis.
I was just gonna ask.
Okay, Senator Sands.
Considering perspective of SDAC, one of the areas that we have constant concern about is issues of workload, and I think that this is one of the more serious attacks, direct, immediate, and with a whole slew of sequelae. So I can't think of something more important for us to do. This, to me, feels as essential to the instruction in the classroom is governance over curriculum and programs. I think that we need to move very strongly. I think that this expresses most of the issues. I would I like the idea of maybe strengthening that language, but just from the FSAC side, I think it's very, very important
phrase in the second to last resolve clause. Discussion? Okay, all those in favor of Senator Brannon's amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so that motion carries. So we're back to the main motion, and Senator Wilson is on the list.
I was just going to say that this defunding of the academic senate is just one the latest in a long string of reasons for expressing expressing concern or no confidence in the chancellor.
Senator Burns.
I'd like to call the question.
There's no speakers list. Is there any objection? Moving straight to a vote. Okay. So all those in favor of the resolution, the only amendment has been the change in the second class result. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Hot damn, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Now, apparently, our resolutions came with release time. All right. So, we're on to business item number two, the disruptive student behavior policy. Senator Madavi.
The disruptive student behavior policy is in front of you. It's being brought forward for several reasons. One is that at this time we don't have any guidelines for how faculty could deal with disruptive behavior in the classroom. We also don't have the good shared language among faculty, students, and staff about what disruptive behavior is. We want to offer some protection both for faculty and students, the ones who know what they are doing in class, protection for faculty and students against students who are behaving in a disruptive manner in the conference. And we also want to establish some timeline for handling issues and keeping faculty informed once a student has been referred to the Student Affairs Division in terms of So I do want to highlight this policy has been worked on with Student Affairs Committee and FSAC and also with digital conversation with AS. And you will see that the resolution comes in three parts. The policy comes in three parts. The first part is the definition of disruptive behavior. Please note that there is a list of behaviors there. It's not an exhaustive list. It's just an example. There is also a policy about how to move forward if a student has a disruption in class. That policy is heavily influenced and in part referenced directly from Executive Order 1043. And then the third part of the policy is the authority, which is Title V, and also the Executive Order 1043. And we would be proposing this as an official or so-called paper.
So we're in a first reading. Changes, major, suggestions for changes, major objections, questions of clarification. Great. Senator Stanghouse.
So FSAC has looked over this very carefully, spent a lot of time as it was being developed, and we've seen consultation with disabled services for students and lawyers along the way, and have also been a channel for lots of comments coming in. We know that from this work, it can be very tricky if we start tinkering parts of it because parts cascade. So I think that as we look through this, we have to be careful about any suggestions for a little change here or a little change there, because they have been worked through extensively with a lot of consultation. The FSAC unanimously supported the version that came forward as it is.
Senator McGrady.
On the second page, there's actually a little typo. Sorry, on the second page, there's actually a little typo. But it does, so it's the policy B, policy, and first full paragraph, second to the last line, it says, or more, two or more consecutive. So I assume that more should not be
be there. But my question really is about consecutive class periods. So if a student gets thrown out of a class, he or she comes to class, is disruptive, you throw them out, and then comes to the next class and is disruptive again, you throw them out. Is that two consecutive classes, or is that two half classes? Does that question make sense?
My understanding is that because they have been allowed to come back, you would be allowed to. No, I'm wrong.
In other words, if you're disruptive in your class,
yes,
there should be, and you ask to leave class, there should be consultation between you and that student, and you either feel it's resolved at that point, or if you have the sense that that student's going to be disruptive, you need to then proceed to ask to the parent to have that student move to your class for an additional class period. In other words, you don't get to keep starting over with one more class, one class, and then.
Okay, so but if the student, if you think it's resolved, you let the student come back and the student is disruptive again, then yes, you can ask the student to leave.
So that would not constitute two consecutive classes.
It's a new incident.
Because this is
right. That was my understanding in our conversation.
That's what I thought. But
Senator Luttman.
A few minor matters here. On the first page, the next to that bullet point, says engaging in erratic or irrational behavior. A little bit concerned about that line. Behavior that someone might find irrational necessarily. Next page, the second bullet point said, refusing to comply with directions to faculty members. Now, faculty members are also subject to taking last judgment. This seems to give our class the issue of direction. Pressure to do qualifying words, legitimate direction. And in under policy, the first of the long paragraph, the sentence again has misplaced meaning. That the woman should be in front of the body of the presidential designation, simply that's what's being funded. Finally, under authority, it says that this Title V lists various infractions of code of conduct. I'm wondering if that does supersede what we're doing here, or to the extent to which it does, or the extent to which we need something for that is to that.
Senator Watershire?
In the policy section on the second page, the second is the first last paragraph. The third line, session formal measures such as private discussion, and either it is controversial private discussion on text on that interface is in office consultation, such as in or office consultation, rather than private discussion.
Senator Urbanski.
I've got somebody in class that's walking up and answering their cell phone every 5 minutes. I'm not going to want to wait to get her in my office to have it in office discussion. I don't want to have it because they're out in the hall. So I don't know if that would more or less kind of come up with disciplinary work to do that. And secondly, a comment I wanted to make about that, it seems that the policy treats all behavior equally. And if someone should be somewhat
you can have your informal resolution anywhere you like. The policy does not, to address your second point, the policy doesn't preclude you from ejecting a student from your class right now. What it does preclude you from doing is not allowing them to come back the next time. So if you have a sort of an emergency situation in that way, and you just need to say, you need to go, this policy would allow you to say, you need to go. It's only that you can't tell them never to come back.
So we've just got 1 minute left. Senator Brannon.
I respectfully disagree with Senator Dunn, and I think the bullet points follow the definition of disruptive behavior that says disruption of high academic segment behavior that at least one individual will do it. But all bullet points are in that context. They all can be interpreted as a reasonable person would think that they're seeking out too much or that they're interrupting them too much. So if that reasonable person standard, I think.
Looks like this will be the last comment. Senator Wilson.
In that paragraph B about dangerous policy dangers, I think on the second line from the bottom, the last full line, I think that there's two more, and I think that the first more is
so. That'll conclude our first reading. If you have more issues or concerns, email them to Senator Madavi, and she'll bring it back at our first Senate meeting of the spring. I have the date, I apologize. But have a wonderful winter break, and have some soup. See you in January.
Ma'am.
unplug the power cord? Because there's a battery, right?